Stanley's, Saxone, Kylemore Bakery. A wonderful range of shops in luxurious surroundings. Late opening Thursdays and Fridays. Easy parking. Swan Center, bringing you the very best of Christmas shopping and entertainment. For value for money and Christmas cheer, shop at the Swan Center, Rathmines.
It's the in place for present buying this Christmas. Kennedy and McSherry's new sports and leisure wear shop, Clubhouse, at 12 Wicklow Street, Dublin. Loads of super present ideas at Clubhouse, 12 Wicklow Street, Dublin.
The good news is New Barbarella's is now open on Monday nights. You can wine, dine and dance the night away. So get on down to New Barbarella's this Monday night. Barbarella's, 76 Fitzwilliam Lane, off Baggot Street, Dublin 2. You never know who you'll meet there.
Broadcasting on 819 kHz AM and 88 FM in stereo.
Radio Nova.
It's 7 o'clock. I'm Sybil Fennell. Good evening. Official figures released today have shown that the number of people out of work here rose by 3,200 last month. The increase was the second highest monthly rise so far this year. It brings the jobless total to almost 200,000, to be exact, 199,500. At the EEC summit meeting in Athens this afternoon, Greece put forward a proposal which would allow Ireland a 2% increase in milk output. This would apply to farmers both north and south. Above this, a super levy would prevent further expansion. Farmers elsewhere would either be confined to 2% above their 1981 output or 5% below this year's production levels. Ireland has dismissed the proposal out of hand. Gardaí have detained another man in connection with the kidnapping of Mr. Don Tidy, an executive of the Quinsworth supermarket chain, from outside his Rathfarnham home 12 days ago. Unconfirmed reports say the man was detained in Navan following the discovery of one of the three vehicles believed to have been used by the gang to make their getaway from Maynooth and County Kildare on the day of the kidnapping. As the violence continues in the Lebanese capital Beirut, the Italian government have said they're reconsidering their participation in the international peacekeeping force there. The presence of British troops in Lebanon was questioned in the House of Commons this afternoon. MPs from both sides expressed anxiety about the escalation of the fighting and called for the troops to be withdrawn. Meanwhile, the United Nations Secretary General has called for an end to the fighting in Lebanon in case it leads to conflict between the two superpowers. In Beirut itself, tension is said to be high following last night's shelling of the American base in which 8 Marines died, and a huge car bomb explosion this morning in a crowded Muslim district of the city. At least 14 people were killed in the blast and almost 200 injured. A car packed with an estimated 300 pounds of explosives is believed to have been parked outside a block of flats shortly before it went off. The building itself collapsed and the balconies were blown off a 9-story block opposite. Several fires were started and more than 30 cars destroyed. Responsibility for the attack was this evening claimed by a group calling itself the Front for the Liberation of Lebanon from Foreigners. Ranks Ireland Limited has been wound up by order of Mr. Justice Barrington in the High Court. The official liquidator is Mr. John Donnelly. Mr. Peter Kelly for the petitioning company said a number of creditors had given notice of their intention to appear in court. 12 of these, with an address at the Fibsborough Mill in Dublin, claimed that the company owed them more than £172,000 and that they therefore opposed the winding up. In Britain, there's to be an independent scientific inquiry into the dumping of low-level radioactive waste from ships. Representatives of the TUC and the Department of the Environment will meet in the new year to decide who should take part. In the meantime, the dumping of waste at sea won't continue. The inquiry won't cover the toxic waste discharged from the Sellafield nuclear reprocessing plant in Cumbria. The Dublin-based charity Hope has been sent $5,000 by John Lennon's widow, Yoko Ono. Hope provides short-term care for homeless children, aged mainly between 12 and 18, many of whom have been sleeping rough, as David Malone reports.
Hope were first of all notified of the $5,000 gift by Yoko Ono's New York office and then by the Ireland Fund. They're a group of Irish and Irish-American business people who donate money to various charities. A spokeswoman at Hope said this evening that they're delighted at Yoko's gift, but a little bemused at why they were chosen. The money will be spent on renovations to their Nelson Street hostel, a fire escape will be built, while extra facilities will be installed in the hostel's kitchen. David Malone for Independent Radio News.
The long-awaited temporary signing-on exchange for the unemployed in the Tallaght area of Dublin will open officially tomorrow and will initially cater for male claimants only. Approximately 4,000 people are unemployed in the Tallaght area, the majority of them male. The exchange will be located at the Eastern Health Board side of Main Street. Fine Gael Senator Larry McMahon this evening welcomed the establishment of the temporary exchange and said hopefully it will mean an end to long queues of people waiting outside the local Garda station in the rain. Police in the north hunting the killer of a Catholic who was shot as he was on his way to his local Labour exchange this morning in the White House area near Belfast have found a motorcycle which may have been used by the gunmen. The dead man was 25-year-old Joe Craven. He was walking with his two brothers when the killer struck. Mr. Craven was shot dead. His brother Michael was also injured. The third brother, Robert, jumped over a fence and had thought he may have broken his leg in doing so. A phone caller to a Belfast radio station this afternoon claimed that the Protestant Action Force had carried out the attack. Test transmissions are underway for Dublin's first local television station. NTV, a branch of Nova Media Services, will start broadcasting a full schedule of programmes before Christmas. These will comprise chat shows, quiz shows, music and films, as the budget allows. This report from David Malone.
NTV can be picked up in colour on any television within the Dublin area with an outside aerial or rabbit's ears on Channel 60 UHF. The initial hours of broadcasting will be between 6 p.m. and 2 a.m., though the franchise is open for breakfast TV as well as programmes in the afternoon, which it's hoped will be entirely in Irish. Initially, 20 people would be employed, though the staff will quickly expand to 100. As a result, there are now vacancies for skilled video technicians, broadcast engineers, cameramen and producers. The range of the signal is 15 miles, and this will not be extended. No copyright laws will be infringed, while pornography and video nasties will not be transmitted. Reacting to the new service, a spokesman at RTE said they had already made public their disapproval of private radio, and the same would apply to TV. However, Chris Carey, managing director of Nova Media Services, described NTV as an experiment in local television, following the success of experiments in local radio. Mr. Carey said that any Irish business should expand and employ as many people as the company allows if the room for expansion is there, and added that NTV will go out of its way to place as much business as possible with Irish companies so they don't have to go abroad. David Malone for Independent Radio News.
And there'll be a further test transmission of NTV at 9 o'clock tonight. They'll also be giving you details of how you can improve reception of Channel 60 NTV. Financial news this evening. At the close of trading, the Irish pound stood at 78.5 pence sterling and at $1.13.5. That's an all-time low against the dollar. On the foreign exchanges, one Irish pound is worth 3.1075 Deutschmarks, 9.449 francs, 178.7 pesetas, and 3.48 Dutch guilders. On the London market, spot gold closed this evening at $397 per fine ounce, and spot silver at £6.52 sterling, again per fine ounce. The Financial Times index closed up 0.7 at 742 exactly. And on Wall Street at 5 o'clock, the Dow Jones was down 1.62 at 1263.62. That's the financial report, courtesy of Comex Commodity Brokers on 608-977. This evening's weather forecast, firstly for the greater Dublin area. It's going to be dry with clear spells overnight. The winds are variable, force 1 to 2. Temperature falling to freezing point, giving ground frost in many areas. Northern Ireland, well, showers will die out there to give a clear night. Temperature falling to just 2 degrees. The winds are northwesterly, force 3 to 5. And for northwestern parts of England, well, it's going to be dry, clear and cold overnight, with frost in most areas. Temperatures will fall to just 1 degree. The winds are northwesterly in direction, force 3 to 4. That's the Independent Radio News and weather. It's 8 minutes past 7. Radio Nova.
Hello, good evening and welcome to Monday's edition of Dublin Today with Ken Hammond. Between now and 7.30, official Unionist MP for Fermanagh South Tyrone, Ken McGuinness, says the British government and Northern Ireland office are not doing enough for border security. Gig Guide has details of what's on entertainment-wise around town tonight. Composer-songwriter Phil Coulter talks to Shane McGowan about his career and next planned project. And we'll be joined in studio by Mark Durkin of USI, who will be talking about their analysis of bank loans for students. And of course, if you have any comments to make on any of this evening's items in the programme, give us a call on Dublin Today. The number is 604043. We'll be very happy to hear from you. But first tonight, the arrest of members of the Ulster Defence Regiment in Armagh at the weekend. The IUC are still questioning a number of men, both full-time and part-time members of the UDR, about terrorist crimes in Armagh. Men were detained in the north of the county about 3 days ago, and according to a report in yesterday's Observer, the IUC are said to have acted on information passed on to them by Catholics in the city of Armagh. The men are being questioned by Murder Squad detectives in Castlereagh Interrogation Centre, and it's believed that their inquiries are centred on the killing last November of a 24-year-old painter named Adrian Carroll outside his Armagh flat. Well, at the time, a group calling itself the Protestant Action Force claimed responsibility for that killing. Jenny McIver spoke by telephone earlier today to deputy leader of the SDLP, Mr. Seamus Mallon, who has called for the immediate disbanding of the UDR. She first asked him, were the operations of the UDR a particular problem for the Catholic population in the Armagh area?
No, I think it is. There is that there, of course, but I think it is a wider problem. In 1974 and 1975, it was proved conclusively that there was a direct link between members of the UDR and loyalist paramilitary organizations. It has also been proved conclusively through the courts that members of this regiment, down through the years since their formation, have been guilty of very serious crimes and guilty of many murders. At that stage, we asked the Secretary of State and those responsible, number one, to tighten up the screening process so that this could not happen again, and number two, to enforce the type of discipline which would prevent it ever happening. Unfortunately, now in 1983, we have seen the same thing coming to the surface. We have seen what looks like a direct involvement of members of the UDR with the Protestant Action Force, which have killed people, and we have seen and see it daily on the streets, especially in Armagh and the Armagh area, the absolutely disgraceful behaviour of these people who are charged with enforcing the law. They have done enormous damage to not just respect for justice and law, but for the type of political settlement and solution which is required. Now, in those circumstances, we had hoped that steps would be taken to, as it were, get rid of the bad apples out of the UDR. Now it is becoming obvious that because of the structure and the composition of that regiment, that it is not just a matter of getting rid of bad apples, it is a matter that this force is inherently unable to act in anything but a sectarian manner. And because of that, I think I must assume the responsibility of saying, look, there will be no political solution that these people can be part of. Now, if that is the case, and I firmly believe that to be the case, then it should be said now so that people would be aware that this regiment is causing not just harm to people on the ground, but it is causing political damage, and it is retarding the search for a political solution.
Well, if the UDR were disbanded and we were left with the RUC as the law enforcement officers, what's the likelihood that that Catholics would still be in a better position? Because we've heard over the last while about a shoot-to-kill policy by the RUC themselves.
Well, I think you put the very finger on the point that I'm trying to make. That is that there is no security or military solution to this problem. There is a political solution to the problem which has not yet been searched properly for. Because until we get to a stage where all sections of the community have confidence in the security forces and will give them their support, then there is no security solution. It can only come as a result of the type of political arrangement which will allow everyone to play his role in keeping and enforcing law. And it is for the very, very good reason that over this past 14 years that we've had crisis after crisis after crisis in Northern Ireland, where we have had different types of demands from both sections of the community. But the reality is that nothing really can be fundamentally dealt with until we have got the type of political solution which will allow everyone to support the forces of justice.
Well, finally, Seamus, what is the likely reaction going to be of the Chief Constable or the Secretary of State to your call?
Well, I don't know. One could predict that they will say to me, that there are very many good and concerned people in the UDR, and I accept that. And I must say that I feel very sorry for people in the UDR who are genuine and concerned and who are honest, decent people. But where you have the track record of the UDR down over the years, and I think people should look at it more carefully, then one has got to say that it is impossible for that body to become the type of law enforcement agency which would command the support of all sections of the community. Now that is a political problem, and that political problem can only be dealt with politically by the Secretary of State. I'm afraid, of course, he will long finger this in the same way as he has long fingered everything else until it comes to a boil. And then, of course, we are at another crisis point, and the matter is much more difficult to deal with.
Seamus Mallon, deputy leader of the SDLP, making a strong call there for the disbanding of the Ulster Defence Regiment because of recent events and indeed because of facts unearthed about the UDR in the mid-70s. You're listening to Dublin Today. It's just gone 7:15. The Gig Guide is next. On Radio Nova.
The Kildare Hotel in Kill presents a fashion show entitled Cloth Knits tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Music from the 50s and 60s will be provided by Nostalgia. The Laughing Gravy Theatre presents The Father by August Strindberg at the Belvedere Court Hotel from tonight through Saturday at 8 p.m. nightly. Loughlinstown Leisure Centre announces its winter programme of sports courses and classes starting tonight. There are approximately 50 courses ranging from yoga to physical fitness on offer, I'm told. And if you want more information, contact Loughlinstown Leisure Centre. Their phone number is 823344.
There's a charity show in the Broadstone Inn tomorrow night. It features Alison and Brendan Kernan and Billy Hughes. Doors open at 7:30. The Donnan, described by many as Ireland's most exciting live band, returned to the National Concert Hall on Monday the 19th. Tickets are now on sale. There'll be a rhythm and blues night in Bridget Burke's in Tower on Wednesday, featuring Larry Hart. And Imagination are in the Apollo Theatre in Manchester tonight. Duran Duran are at the same venue tomorrow and on Wednesday. And on Friday, it's Robert Plant.
The Crofton Airport Hotel is the venue for a fashion and hair show in aid of the United Counties organisation tonight. That organisation is a voluntary group who raise funds for St Michael's House. The event begins at 8 p.m. and admission is £2.50. There's a charity disco in Powers Hotel tonight from 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. It's to raise funds for a cobalt cancer machine for St Anne's Hospital. Admission is £4, payable at the door.
The Project Arts Centre are currently presenting a week of concerts featuring the best of the young Irish bands. Tomorrow night it's Toy with Rhythm and Peter Hamilton. On Wednesday, Casablanca Moon. And on Thursday, Eugene. Music tonight from the home front.
I think that's my fault. No, we've already had music tonight from the home front, so let's go back to what's on tonight. Students at the Community College in Dunshopland will stage a 24-hour fast on Wednesday next. That's December the 7th. The proceeds from the fast will go to Concern and the Dunshopland Voluntary Aid Society. An original Irish musical comedy called Our Hero is being performed by Rhyme Productions in the John Player Theatre from Wednesday through Saturday. That's the 7th through the 10th of December. The Rathmines Grove Players present Table Manners in St. Louis School Hall on December the 7th, 8th, 9th and 11th. It's on at 8 p.m. nightly and admission is just £2. Back to you, Ken.
Thank you very much indeed, Sybil. What's a little music between friends? The official Unionist MP for Fermanagh South Tyrone, Mr. Ken McGuinness, has called for the building up of up to 100 patrol bases along the border so as to stop guns and explosives being brought across the border. Mr. McGuinness said that the post would be manned by about 35 men. The call comes after an announcement by Mr. McGuinness last week that he would propose a bill in Westminster which would enable devolution to begin in the north with further powers for the Assembly at Stormont. Jenny McIver asked Mr. McGuinness by telephone today why he expected Mr. Pryor to give serious consideration to his proposal on better border security, considering his party had refused to meet with Mr. Pryor last week for full round-the-table security talks.
My party did, in fact, meet Mr. Pryor after the Dartley killings. In fact, it was the Member of Parliament for that area, Mr. Jim Nicholson, and myself who spoke to Mr. Pryor, and we did mention at that stage the need to ensure that terrorists did not have an easy supply and resupply route for weapons and explosives.
Well, how insecure is the border at the moment? How open is it?
Well, your own Minister of Justice, Mr. Noonan, highlighted just how open it was. When in a radio interview with Robin Day on the World at One, he said that the RUC were not patrolling right up to the frontier. Now, there's a reason why the police should not be asked to do this. If there is not proper cover by the army for our police, then of course they're simply going to be driving along roads which are going to be mined by terrorists, and we're going to have a greater loss of life. The army have a responsibility, and I believe would have a role which they would welcome if they were placed along the frontier in a firm patrol basis where they could have continuity of patrolling and endeavour to make it much more difficult for terrorists to move back and forward.
So are you basically calling for better cross-border cooperation between both security forces?
Indeed, the point has been made by the Irish Republic's government that they spend a great deal of money in trying to ensure that security is tightened up south of the frontier. Of course, I may look at and see the unarmed policemen who can be held quite easily by terrorists. They're not a real deterrent. Nonetheless, one does accept that the effort is being made. What I feel and what I'm most critical is that I believe that my government is not committed to the same extent.
So you think the southern government are more committed to this border security than in the north?
I think at least the southern government, and it's easier for them. Their police and their army are not being landmined, so it's easier for them to come close to the frontier. But nonetheless, they are making the effort, albeit with unarmed police who are not competent to deal with terrorists if there is a confrontation. I think that if we had the army in situ, in firm patrol bases, just north of the frontier, then there would certainly be a role for the authorities south of the frontier to see that attacks were not mounted from there. But it would be much easier for them to do it, and they would actually have a particular operational role. It's very hard to define their operational role when, in fact, the Northern Ireland office, the British government, has not seemed to have committed itself to stopping what Mr. Pryor called the Dundalk Corridor, I think he called it.
Was Mr. Pryor as critical of the Northern security forces, and was he happy with the way the South security forces were behaving in this particular area when you met with him?
Well, I didn't ask him his attitude to the efforts being made by the Southern authorities. What I did suggest was that he deploy a third of the regular troops, which he tells us are stationed in Northern Ireland at the moment. He tells us there are about 10,000. I want about 3,500 of those.
Well, do you yourself expect Mr. Pryor to do anything about this particular call you've made, considering that you're still boycotting the Assembly?
Well, I don't think the boycotting of the Assembly or our withdrawal from the Assembly has anything directly to do with this. There are two elements connected with our withdrawal. One is, of course, that we do not want to waste our time in a powerless assembly for any longer. We've been there for a year. We've tried to make it work for a year. It's time now that it rolled ahead a little bit, that more power was devolved to it. Perhaps an administrative power only. At this stage, we could talk about legislative power later. That's one of the elements concerning the withdrawal. The other element certainly is security, and my party will be keeping up its pressure on Mr. Pryor in order to see that the government fulfills its obligation to the community in Northern Ireland. I'm talking about the entire community.
Wouldn't you be in a better position to ensure that in the Assembly?
Not at all. The Assembly has no real power to impose its will on Mr. Pryor. At the moment, it's Mr. Pryor's Assembly. It's not serving any real purpose or any fruitful purpose as far as I'm concerned and as far as my constituents are concerned. it could be made to serve a useful purpose, but not at this moment.
That was Mr. Ken McGuinness, official unionist MP for Fermanagh South Tyrone. In a moment, we'll be talking about new proposals for student loans. That's after this ad break.
Now, there's a powerful cider on draft. New Bulmers Draft. Bulmers Draft. Bright, golden, biting cold and dry. A pint of Bulmers Draft for a man-made thirst.
You can go right out and shout it. There is no doubt about it. None stores better value beats them all.
Make it a better value Christmas this year by doing all your Christmas shopping at Dunn Stores. You'll find a fabulous selection of St. Bernard gifts and fashions for all the family, as well as lower food prices for turkeys, hams and drink. Nobody but nobody will undersell Dunn Stores.
No matter where you go, you'll hear the people say, St. Bernard's the brand of quality today. Dunn Stores, better value beats them all.
In 1171... King Henry II invited all the chieftains of Ireland to a sumptuous banquet in a specially built palace not a stone's throw from Trinity College. We are told that it was a truly royal feast, which impressed everyone by its costly and magnificent fare. If King Henry were throwing a banquet today, no doubt he would treat his guests to King Crisps, the luxury taste for discerning palates. King Crisps, the luxury cheese and onion crisps.
At Chivers, we've done something special to jelly. Now, Chivers jelly contains real fruit juice. That's why it tastes even more delicious than before. Watch out for new, improved Chivers jelly in the bright new package. It's the only jelly with real fruit juice.
ECRU, ECRU, the ultimate look for men. ECRU is shirts by Cirio and Caporal, designer knitwear by Malto and Brands, sportswear by Matinique and Prague, leather by Tabasco and 17th Parallel. ECRU, ECRU, of Grafton Street and the ILAC Centre.
Bring back that old-fashioned quality to Christmas. Choose your gifts from Lawrence's, the quality jewelers. Breathtaking diamonds, beautifully cut, mounted in gold. Fabulous watches, analog and digital. A special selection of thoughtful gifts in gold and silver for the man or woman in your life. Christmas gifts at Lawrence's, the diamond ring specialists of Henry Street and ILAC Centre.
Welcome back to Dublin Today. At a special press conference this evening, the Union of Students in Ireland outlined their objections to new proposals for a loan scheme to finance third-level students through college. The basic idea, forwarded by the former Minister for Education, Mr. John Boland, Gemma Hussey, current Minister for Education, and Mr. Alan Dukes, Minister for Finance, amongst others, is designed so as a student loan subsidised by the government would help students pay their way through college. It is hoped by the politicians that the scheme will facilitate equality of access to students entering third-level education. This evening, the USI condemned the scheme, saying it would, in effect, deny the vast majority of people a chance to make a decent life for themselves by continuing their education. Well, joining me now in the studio to discuss the whole concept of student loans is the Deputy President of the Union of Students of Ireland, Mark Durkan. Mark, you're very welcome. You produced a very elaborate document today, which would take some assimilation, but perhaps you could tell me what your main objections to the scheme are.
Well, first of all, there are many problems in third-level education in Ireland, many injustices and many inequalities. It is the fact that it's far harder now for a young person to get into higher education than it would have been if he'd have been of that age, say, 15 years ago. It's clear that it's actually becoming increasingly difficult for the less well-off to get into higher education. There's a far, far, far greater demand for places in higher education. Those are the problems faced in higher education at the minute. We've been pressing the government to actually bring change in those areas and in other areas in higher education. And all that they've responded with is actually a loan scheme, which won't solve any of those problems, but will actually exacerbate them.
But on the numbers, is that actually, that restriction that you're talking about, is that actually reflected in the absolute numbers? Are there not now more people receiving third-level education than before?
There are more people receiving third-level education actually than before, but there are far more people not receiving, missing third-level education than ever before. The percentage of young people going into higher education is now far lower than it was even 5 years ago, never mind 15 years ago. So people's percentage opportunities are actually decreasing.
So the proportion is down.
the proportion of people in higher education is well down, and in particularly the proportion of less well off people in higher education has not actually improved by any way whatsoever. Now, the main thing the government have in the past, all along they have said that the grant scheme as it exists at the moment was fair. They've said all along that the grant scheme allowed the less well off a better chance. Now they actually admit that it doesn't allow the less well off a better chance. But what they're saying is, we're not going to solve that problem. We won't solve the fact that the less well-off are getting in. We will just make the better-off who are getting in pay more. And that does not address the problem of the inequality of access whatsoever. Rather than seeking to eliminate it, it just seeks to establish and exacerbate it.
Well, Mark, can you give us a sort of resume of what they propose? How do they see the scheme working, first of all, and then perhaps we can look at
Well, they haven't come up with the full details as such yet. There is a certain amount of kite-flying going on, and they're consulting very strongly with the banks on the whole scheme. Basically, what they would be hoping to do, as we understand it, is that rather than have grants from the government to students going into higher education, students would just, of their own means, go to the banks and seek loans by which to pay very, very high fees, because the aim of this scheme is not to save on the grant scheme as it is at the minute. It's not just to pay the fees that we currently have, but it's actually to be able to charge far, far, far higher fee levels. That's the main aim. So basically the government want to be able to charge up to two and three times the present fee levels and not give any grant scheme. It would be dependent totally on the banks, on the commercial banks.
But don't the government already subsidise education, state level education, to a great extent? I mean, people paying only pay something like a third or perhaps a quarter of what it actually costs.
Yes, well, you have the situation at the minute that the first point I would make is Ireland. Students in Ireland pay the highest level of tuition fees in the whole of Europe. Irish students pay far more than any other country in Western Europe. So the question of subsidy doesn't stand in the way most people actually forward it. The other problem about this whole question of the government actually subsidising people, obviously education is a matter of public investment. Education is a public resource, and there has to be public money actually in education. But most importantly, there has to be equal access of the public to education when there is that public expenditure. What the present loan scheme seeks to do is have a higher education system which would be totally privatised. People could only get in on the basis of private means, and would mean that, okay, the government can argue we're not subsidising it, but it would mean that the vast majority of young people in Ireland could not even aspire to get into higher education. That's what that would mean if you didn't have that subsidy.
So you think that the scheme would polarise the affluent and those less well off even further than at present?
Well, it clearly would. I mean, we have gone to the government with the whole problem of the inequality of access. And what the government have actually said now, after saying for years there was no inequality of access, are now saying, yes, only the better off can get into higher education, so we'll charge far more for it. We'll make it even more difficult for people to get into higher education. And that is the logic of let them eat cake, and you boil it down.
But presumably that's not a politically wise move. Do you think they're just being ingenuous or naive, or are you suggesting that they're being scheming in terms of increasing fees and ultimately hiving off the expense and putting it onto individuals? Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, it's basically the policy just amounts to one of privatisation, double-barrelled privatisation, not that, because it means that, first of all, it'll depend on your own private income or your own private income earning potential as to whether or not you can afford to get into higher education. And meanwhile, the private institutions, i.e. the banks, will actually make a massive profit on the whole scheme. So it's basically a move to privatisation, actually by a government which doesn't care much either for education or anything else. It's yet another attack on young people by a government that has come up with quite a few of them. I don't know exactly what the logic of it is in the government, because in any count it doesn't stand. It'll actually cost far more than a decent grant system would, because it involves huge administrative costs. It inflates. It has inflationary effects on wages, and we all know that the state employs well over a quarter of people working in the country at the minute. So the state would actually end up paying those falsely inflated wages at the end of the day. And it just costs an enormous amount of money in tax concessions that have to be given. But the figures that mean stand...
I was going to come to that, but just roughly, we haven't an awful lot of time, but mm-hmm. roughly, what sort of money are we talking about for us?
Well, the sort of money that we're talking about would be, if we take that the fees within a year or two would be a £2,000, say, for a 3 or 4 year course, you would have a situation where you would be going to the bank looking for £4,000 loan per year. The interest rate on that would be at 17.75%. You'd be paying that loan over 7 years, and that would be, you're talking about paying nearly £29,000 that somebody would be paying in their first 7 years of employment. And I think anybody listening will know that that is an impossible burden. And if it is to be met by anyone, an absolutely impossible burden. And that's the sort of thing that people are bringing forward for education. As I said earlier, it's the logic of let them eat cake. It isn't addressing the real problem at all. It's actually galvanising that injustice and that nonsensical inequality that we have, that we call the Irish education system.
So you think it's prohibitive all round?
It's prohibitive all round. We still haven't heard any justifiable logic from the government on it, and it discriminates against the less well-off. It'll discriminate very strongly against women. There's absolutely no, in terms of the logic that you'd think should apply, the educated logic should apply in 1983, it doesn't stand up at all.
Mark Durden, thank you very much for coming in and talking to us. Now, songwriter and world-renowned composer Phil Coulter was in Dublin over the weekend to promote his latest album, Classic Tranquility. Well, Shane McGowan met with him and spoke to him about his latest project and his phenomenally successful career to date. But first, here's a taste of his new album, an instrumental track called Scorn Not His Simplicity.
Latest album. Why did you pick Irish music, Ham?
Because it's the whole area of music that is closest to my heart, and this is something which, this was a project which I did for me as much as for any other reason. I mean, I've been involved with Irish music for years and years. I mean, it's one of my formative influences as a kid, and in my professional life, alongside of working with more obviously commercial acts, you know, like the Bay City Rollers or whomever, I've also worked with a succession of folk acts, whether it be the Dubliners or Planxty or latterly the Furies, and it's just it's a whole area of music which is very close to me, and something which I really find very, very fulfilling.
In Phil Coulter, when people think of that name, they probably first think of Puppet and a String, Congratulations from the Eurovision of the 60s. How important do you think Eurovision is? It was of great significance to your own career, but nowadays do you think it still holds that importance for anyone?
It certainly was of great significance to me, because there was no better way to arrive on the scene as a songwriter than to win the Eurovision for Great Britain at the first attempt, and indeed for the very first time that the UK ever won, and in a 4-year period, I think I had the best of Eurovision. In 67 I had Puppet on a String, in 68 I had Congratulations, 69 I wasn't involved at all, but then in 70 we'd set up our own publishing company, and I picked up a song called All Kinds of Everything in the heats of the Eurovision in Ireland, and signed it up to the publishing company before it had even won to represent Ireland, and sort of reorchestrated it and laced it with a little bit of the Eurovision sparkle, and we won again. So I mean, the Eurovision has been very good to me, and I've had some of the best years, but I think that nowadays it's become really pretty irrelevant. You just have to look at the success, or indeed the lack of success, of even a Eurovision winner. Today, I can't even remember what won the Eurovision last year or the year before, but I think now it's got a little old and a little flabby, and I think it's really a parody of what it used to be, quite honestly.
On from the Eurovision, the other highlights in your career probably would have been, from the general public's point of view of being aware of Phil Coulter, the Bay City Rollers, Kenny, Slick, they all enjoyed enormous popularity in the mid-70s. All these teeny bop bands with big image and a lot of hype behind them, I think it's fair to say. Did you keep in mind that you were writing for a teeny bop audience? And was it a lot simpler than working for the orchestras or the classical work you've done?
And it's very, very difficult to write those kind of simple three-chord tricks. You know, it's something which is dismissed by record critics and music business pundits, but that's a very difficult thing to do, to write a song or to make a record that sounds You know, it sounds as if it was written in 5 minutes. They're the difficult ones to achieve. Any professional songwriter will tell you that. The packaging and the marketing and the promotion of acts like the Bay City Rollers was very important. Fair enough. That was probably the start of that whole visual hype, which has now gone to the other extreme and get acts who are spending 20, 30, 40, 50,000 pounds in making a video. You know, spending more money and more time in making the video and making the record, which I think is nonsense.
The Irish industry, the Irish music industry, you've had some involvement there with Joe Dolan, lately Geraldine Branigan, and indeed your own current album. Do you think here, there's a lot of argument currently at the moment with radio stations saying they don't play enough Irish music, things like that. There's a totally different structure in Ireland with the show band era, I think, is dying out now, but there's definitely this country and western element here. Do you think that it's been controlled too much and that maybe there's a big change coming this direction, or do you think that there's something totally wrong with the Irish industry?
Certainly that mediocrity rules in the record industry. That's what's wrong. There is no, I mean, this is all this nonsense about a calculated campaign not to play Irish records, to me is paranoia. If the records were good and if the records were worth playing, I'm sure they would be played. But there is no record that has got the divine right to be played on radio because it happens to be made in Ireland. That doesn't give any artist or any record producer or any company the right to have that record played. You know, we're talking about a business. We're talking about the necessity of competing on an international level with... I mean, you know, that records, radio stations are not some wing of a national propaganda machine. You know, they don't exist to support mediocre talents in the country. They exist to give the public what they want to hear, and the public obviously do not want to hear third-class records. It's as simple as that.
How is your own songwriting? You've been classically trained. You've been involved in every aspect of music, I think it's fair to say. Are you one of these people that gets up in the middle of the night, or does it come naturally to you when you're sitting at the piano or playing a guitar or something like that?
No, I'm not one of those inspired writers. You know, I don't suddenly sit bolt upright at 4 o'clock in the morning and think, ah, God, that's a hit song. I am a craftsman. In other words, I have learned my craft. I've spent years learning the craft of putting songs together, so that I am now in a situation where I don't write badly constructed songs. I mean, I may not always write great songs or hit songs, but I mean, I'm a craftsman as much that any song that I turn out is well put together. And I think that's what then, given that sort of approach, what then makes the difference between a well put together song and a hit song is just that little bit of fairy dust, whatever it may be, that the idea, the originality, the hook, just that something special that makes a good song into a hit song, or indeed into a great song.
Away from songs, just your whole career in general, has there been any, with all the colourful moments, has there been any one particular moment that you would have said, God, this is great, this is it?
Yeah, I've had a few of those, thank God. I think it varies. You know, when I look back in my career, I've had a lot of highs. I remember the first time that I heard Luke Kelly singing The Town I Love So Well in the Royal Albert Hall at a Dubliners concert. I can remember a very, very warm feeling creeping over me because this was something special. This was something different. This was not, I wasn't talking then about a hit song or a hit record. This was really something special. And I knew then, the very first time I heard him sing it, that I knew in 20 or 30 years' time, when I'm dead and gone and Luke Kelly is dead and gone, that The Town I Love So Well will still be around.
By the gas yard wall, and we laughed through the smoke and the smell. Going home in the rain, running up the dark lane, past the jail and down behind the fountain.
Gentle tugging at the heartstrings there, and my thanks to Shane McGowan for talking there to Phil Coulter. Now on to your comments. On the call by the OUP for greater border security, Anne O'Kane from Drimnagh says, who are the official unionists trying to fool? This call for greater border security is a ploy to distract public attention from their absence in the Assembly. And on the USI interview, it is not the bank's role to finance education. It is the government's job and the commitment they have regularly made when going before the electorate, so says Richard Simmers of Temple Oak. On Mr. Mallon's comments, not only should the UDR be disbanded, they should also be prosecuted if found or suspected to be involved in terrorist activities. That's from Ben Anderson in Dublin 12. And Charles McKeown of Rathgar says if the official unionists are interested in security, we'll go back to where their electorate put them, i.e. in the Assembly. It may not be everything, but it's better than nothing. Anne Brown of Ranelagh says the UDR is obviously promoting sectarianism by its existence. Seamus Mallon is right, disband it immediately. Now, on another item on the USI interview, from Tim Blackwell in Dorky, he says, I agree with USI on their opposition to this loan scheme. The grant scheme should be made more realistic and equitable and should be extended to cover more students. And Mr. Woods of BlackRock on the same subject says that Mark Durkin's remarks were very prejudiced. The student loan system in the United States works very well. Finally, I was very interested in Phil Coulter's comments on the Irish music industry, so says Tommy Long of Cabra, and I wish him well in his latest project, or so say all of us. And that's it from Dublin Today on this Monday evening. My thanks to tonight's producer.